540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In Chicago, catastrophic flooding impacts communities across Vermont, with some cut off by heavy rains and rising water. CBS's Meg Oliver in Montpelier.
More than 6 inches of rain in 2 days caused widespread flooding, leaving few areas untouched.
And here we go.
Andrew Mullen, co-owner of Sam's Steakhouse, showed us as he went back for the first time since the storm.
It's a war zone. This is...
You're just stepping in mud.
This is pure mud.
So what happened in here?
The water was nearly up to the ceiling. It was incredible.
President Biden has approved an emergency declaration. Extreme temperatures have Americans under heat alerts from California to Florida. CBS's Omar Villafranca in Phoenix.
After 11 straight days of temperatures of at least 110 degrees, people in Phoenix are trying anything they can to cool down. Some bus stops, even businesses, use these water misters, which can cool the air by about 30 degrees.
Two grand juries are seated in Atlanta as prosecutors edge closer to seeking criminal indictments against former President Trump for alleged 2020 election interference. WSB's Veronica Waters.
52 Fulton County residents are now sworn in.
So help you God.
And starting their two-month grand jury term.
It's official.
Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney tells them they're a check on the system to ensure that nobody's put on trial just because a prosecutor wants it.
You decided true bill, not true bill, because of the evidence or lack of evidence that you heard.
One group is expected to decide whether there's enough evidence to charge people criminally for election meddling after ex-President Trump's loss.
I just want to find 11,780 votes.
Charging decisions are anticipated in August. Veronica Waters for CBS News, Atlanta.
11 NATO countries have agreed to start a program in Europe to train Ukrainian pilots on F-16s. CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland.
The basing for these aircraft in Ukraine will also require a substantial amount of new infrastructure. Whatever bases are used by Ukraine for these aircraft will become primary targets for Russian attack and consequently require extensive air defense protection.
Pennsylvania jail inmate Michael Burham has been on the run for 5 days after using bedsheets to escape from the Warren jail. The reward for the murder suspect's capture has been up to almost $20,000. Pennsylvania State Police Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens.
The pace and scope of this investigation has continued to dramatically increase as we investigate leads in this area and adjacent states. Several of those leads included possible sightings last evening and overnight, as well as discovery of break-ins of unoccupied structures or cabins.
This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For WAUK, The Shaw, I'm Terry Bell, and here's what you need to know. Milwaukee's getting a sales tax. The Common Council voted for the 2% sales tax this morning on a 12-3 vote. State lawmakers and the governor put the matter to elected leaders as part of the shared state revenue deal. The mayor's office says the tax could generate about $190 million a year. Meanwhile, the Milwaukee County Board today is holding a public hearing on its own proposed sales tax. The Waukesha Parade killer is sentenced in an unrelated case. Daryl Brooks took a plea deal yesterday for possessing a firearm as a convicted felon. He was originally charged with 3 felonies, accused of shooting at his nephew and his nephew's friend 3 years ago. Brooks is serving 6 consecutive life sentences for his attack on the Christmas parade in 2021. I'm Terry Bell, and this is WAUK News.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Don McCrute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show. On 540 AM WAUK.
When you're high, you feel different.
think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network. CivicMedia.us.
...by almost 50% by 2035.
And will that be in time?
No, but it's a very good start.
I didn't think so. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today because we didn't have the heart, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Came across an interesting little sign today on the social medias, work-related sign. Evidently, the Golden Arch place, the place with the big M, you know what it is, yellow M out on the street corner. They're all over the place. Takes, you know, billions of dollars in federal money to support a workforce that they underpay, that they overwork, under schedule, you know, all that stuff. Saw this interesting sign, caught my attention, thought, man, this gets me. Evidently, the big M says, we value you, your growth and your contributions. We value you. But we're not going to pay you. We're not going to give you health care, you know, retirement security. We're not going to help you make this, you know, something you can live off of. No. We're not going to do that. But hey, we'll, like the pandemic, we'll give you nice names, shiny little badges for your uniform, you know, all that stuff. We'll do the, you know, the pats on the back, pats on the head, you know, that stuff. But the sign in big bold letters says, in red too, it's a big stop sign. This is a no quit restaurant. This is what they're saying. So no quit restaurant, no quitting, not allowed to quit. And they go on to say, because we feel that many situations can be resolved. It is the policy of the restaurant that an employee cannot quit until he or she talks to the restaurant management or area supervisor. Now, I mean, if you really want to quit, you know, two words could really make that, you know, pretty simple. You know, there's a giant, you know what I'm saying. There's a way, you know, to, but that wouldn't be a quit. That'd be a fire, and that would be insubordination, and that would be bad, and I don't believe that. Now, here's the thing. This is the weird thing. Because we were just talking about how, you know, in the workplace, you know, workers are finally starting to find some power. I see this sign, and it's one of those things where you go, the only power a worker really has is to fold their arms, put their hands in their pockets, and march their feet. That's all they've got, to withhold their labor. They don't control anything else in the workplace. They don't choose who gets hired or fired. They don't choose any of that stuff. That's the employer. They don't set the terms and the conditions and the working environment. They don't do any of that stuff. Again, that's the employer. They don't dole out work assignments. They don't set the terms of the day. They don't do any of that. None of it. Now they want you to believe that we'll take your views under advisement. There's a suggestion box out front, and we know what happens when people have suggested things. Think of those workers at Trader Joe's who said, "Hey, we would like better PPE," and they said, "Well, we disagree. You're fired." This is how this game has been played for a very long time. Because management has the power to evaluate, set goals, targets, deadlines. They've got all this. They set all of the workplace policies, everything, dress code, code of conduct, use of resources, all of this stuff. And we know this, right? They set whether it's going to be a healthy or a safe workplace. They set whether it's going to be dangerous. And they're going to cut quarters. Workers don't have any say, unless, as I've said, over the years, you have a union to negotiate, to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. But most people understand, in the private sector, only about 6.7%, we'll go 7, only 7% of the workforce has a union. That means 93% of the people live under the master-servant relationship. Constantly monitored, constantly surveilled, always under the gun, we're going to discipline you, we'll demote you, all of this stuff. And we've seen it, and none of this is new. But this sign really just sent me completely off the deep end, because we've seen this stuff before. They're attempting to limit a worker's ability to move, to put their hands in their pockets and march to their feet. And this is the kind of stuff we're going to see a lot more of. Trust me, this is coming. There was a state a couple of years ago, if I remember, I think it may have been Illinois, actually, that said that if a teacher wanted to quit, during the year, they might pull her. They're going to pull her teaching certificate, going to pull her license, basically trapping that teacher into that environment. And look, it could be a horrible environment. So the only way that you can get out of that is, go in and get yourself fired. And nobody wants to do that. Now, the weird thing, and I keep coming back to this moment, employers have all the power, all of it. And this is the weird thing, because I've had people go, "We don't need no union. The benevolent company gives me these wonderful things." And you go, no, the company gives you what little they can give you to maximize their profit off your back. It's called capitalism. Maybe you've heard of it. It's how this works. But what they like to do is they like to strengthen their position. Think of non-competes. In certain very isolated instances where you're talking about highly technical, patented kind of stuff, the proprietary information that a company may have hold in their secret vault. If someone were to go to a competitor with that information, you go, okay, I can see that. But a sandwich shop? I'm sorry. You may remember this. There was a sandwich shop. It was Jimmy John's that had people signing non-competes to where they literally couldn't walk across the street, or they wanted their employees to believe they couldn't walk across the street and make a peanut butter jelly sandwich. Now, none of this stuff would hold up in court, but how many working people have the ability to, fight it? How many people know that they even signed it? And this is the thing that keeps me going back to: you need representation. And I think this is why we're seeing, a lot of interest right now. Because, it got me thinking about the history of, labor's history and where we've come from. The old yellow dog contracts, you may have heard that. 80, 90 years ago, employer would make you sign a yellow dog contract. It was a contract that said, if you ever joined a union, you would be fired immediately. Even if you showed any interest in joining, you'd be fired immediately. Now, the Supreme Court eventually ruled that unconstitutional. But understand, the employer still thinks, they think you may, because they don't want any infringement on their power. And I started thinking about, the history of the employee-employer relationship. And, I guess I've said a million times, here in Pennsylvania, the workers' comp law still refers to master and servant. There's still that mentality that once you walk across that threshold, once you are on the clock, your behind is theirs. You do what they say, when they say, how they say, where they say, all of that stuff. You have basically sold yourself. And, I started thinking about forced arbitration clauses that are now the norm in every employment contract, in every employment situation. And again, most people don't even know they're signing this stuff. On the first day of work, they give you a whole bunch of things. Here, sign your life away. You want a job, don't you? Here, sign your life away. And people sign it without actually thinking about what kind of more power you're giving to these employers. And it got me coming back to this pendulum swing that we've been living through over the last 40 years. Dan, sent me an email just a few minutes before the show and said, hey, it's time to crush and reverse Reaganomics. I've been a union member in various unions, and I've lived through Reaganomics my entire life, and it sucks. Reagan totally screwed the unions and the middle class. Unfortunately, they named an interstate after that blank hole, which I have to drive on a lot. It really makes him mad. Different phrase. But here's the thing, that pendulum swing that Dan is talking about, this move from the FDR era of we want to encourage strong unions, we want to encourage high tax rates to ensure that that you don't have a handful of extraordinarily powerful people, and breaking up of conglomerates and competition and all of those things that built the most prosperous working class in history. Reagan tore all that stuff down. Neoliberalism destroyed all of that stuff. Supply side voodoo Reaganomics, all of it gone. And in its place, tax cuts for the very wealthy, tax cuts for big corporations, consolidation and monopolization. And look, Democrats were on board with this too. Clinton was a neoliberal right there. And I remember back in the 90s talking to some union friends, union leaders at the time, and railing against neoliberals. And, quietly they would go, hey, some of our friends are neoliberals. And you go, no, they're not our friends. They are ruining this country. They are destroying communities. They are taking jobs out of this. Free trade was a disaster. And the reason I bring this up is we're in a moment right now where we've got a guy in the White House who remembers that era. Now, you can go, well, he voted for all that stuff. And he did. He was sold. He drank some of the Kool-Aid and went along with it. Now he's the guy. He's in charge. He's got the mantle. And look what he's been doing. Taking on China, reshoring manufacturing, investing in infrastructure, talking about increasing taxes, getting the rich to pay what they should be paying. And look, he's not even talking about where I'm at. I think we should be taxing billionaires out of existence. It is no good for our country. We should be breaking up big corporations. We should be encouraging competition. You know what capitalism was supposed to be. We're in a moment where that sainted Ronald Reagan and the views of supply side voodoo Reaganomics is finally, people are waking up and go, it didn't work. Nothing trickled down to the working class, because our 1%, their insatiable appetite for more never ends. So when Dan sends this email, I know hundreds of people like Dan who are tired of working their behinds off, busting their behind day after day, only to come up short, only to not be able to do as well as their parents and their grandparents. And that's why I think we're in this moment. And corporate America understands. Corporate America sees what's going on, which is why, they want to take away. Well, this is a no-quit zone. What the? Are you kidding me? But they're going to try. Because they can. And this is where it comes back to us. It comes back to working people saying enough is enough. It comes back to enough of us going, we're not going to take it. We're not going to tolerate this behavior anymore. To me, it seems like it's about time. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Would you walk in and say, you know what? Would you go through that? It's a no-quit zone. You okay with that? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this is a story that got, you know, I don't think got a lot of attention. And you wonder why Ron DeSantis is not doing well in the polls. Evidently, he has rejected about almost $400 million in federal energy funds to fuel efficiency rebates, electrification, all part of the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. There's a bunch of stuff out there to help people, you know, transition into more fuel efficient stuff, to electric, you know, whatever. And again, this is where you want to take advantage of it. You should be able to. The governor is saying, no, we're not going to take it. We're not going to take almost $400 million in funds to help, help do anything on the climate. Nothing. Head in the sand. Complete denial. No problem in Florida. There's no problem in Florida. And it got me thinking about it. You know, this guy on TikTok, angry old guy, uses the F word a lot. Talking about how, you know, there's no such thing as global warming. If there were, you know, there'd be no banks writing, you know, mortgages. There'd be no insurance companies insuring anything. Well, I bring this up for a reason, because we are farmers. Da, 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 da. Evidently, farmers is the canary in the coal mine, because I think they're going to be the first. Understand, Florida is, you know, when climate changes and Florida's underwater, they eventually will come begging for federal dollars, even though they didn't take any federal dollars to help not let it happen. They will at some point. Now, what's interesting, you know, before I get into farmers, Florida has home insurance rates that are like 3-4 times the national average. I saw one story said around $6,000 a year for homeowners insurance in Florida, when the national average is about $1,700. I saw another story that said it was, you know, somewhere around $4,300 when the national average is $1,500. Doesn't matter. Florida is paying incredibly high insurance rates. Now, what happens is most people can't afford it, so they're left out in the cold. They don't insure their homes. And when a disaster comes through, you know, they're looking with their hand out to the federal government. So, you know, California, Pennsylvania, New York, you know, Michigan, all these states then kick in federal money that goes to these people who couldn't afford the insurance, but still got wiped out anyway. So DeSantis, again, not taking the money to help, you know, do anything on the climate front, has done virtually nothing here. Well, that's not true. Not true. He's not that he's done virtually nothing. He's done quite a bit taking insurance industry money to stop any kind of, you know, homeowner revolt, homeowners suing insurance companies when they don't pay. You know, it's money well spent. Now, the reason I brought up, you know, we are farmers, da, 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 da. The reason I brought them up, they're leaving Florida. They are no longer going to write new policies or renew existing homeowner, auto,
and umbrella policies. It's going to affect about 100,000 people in Florida. And, you know, the Florida guy who oversees the insurance, the chief financial officer, he ain't happy. And he says that he's going to hold them accountable. And you go, wait a second, as long as they live out the term of their contract and, you know, they end it within the law and all that, there's nothing you can do. It's called capitalism. Maybe you've heard of it. It's a contract. You signed it. You paid for a certain amount of time. That's what happens. That's how the game is played. And what Farmer is saying is, look, you know, we're not losing money. And what I find interesting is, and I was thinking about this as, you know, my son and I are learning to ride motorcycles. You know, if my son were to have, you know, multiple accidents, with speeding tickets, you name it, whatever could possibly happen, he would still be able to get insurance. Now, it might cost a lot of money, but he'd still be able to get it, even if it's one of those bottom feeder companies. This is what I expect to see in Florida at some point. The sad reality is they're not doing much to not help the water rise and put Florida underwater. And my mind went to this part where maybe DeSantis needs to build a wall. Maybe DeSantis needs to build a big wall all around Florida. Or maybe we just need to build one right at the top of Florida and go, you know what? We're writing this off. Because blue states have got to, at some point, get tired of funding disaster after disaster when they're not even taking care of themselves. And insurance companies are going to leave in huge numbers, even though Florida is one of those states that has some of the most lax environments for insurance companies. In fact, you know, as this report that I was reading pointed out, that DeSantis signed a piece of legislation that took away the ability of homeowners to recover attorney's fees when they had to sue insurance companies. Because how did it go? It went something along the lines of, you know, these frivolous lawsuits, you know, increase the costs of doing business in Florida. We can't have that because we want to be business friendly. Now, the weird thing is, and this is the other interesting thing, all of this stuff happened under DeSantis's watch. So what is it that made it balloon? Is it that, you know, climate change is finally, you know, doing a lot of things? Insurance companies are wising up, because, again, he was sworn in 2019, and it's been this kind of explosion in homeowner insurance rates on his watch. Now, as I said, you know, he signed this piece of legislation, and, you know, he's collected about $4 million in campaign donations from insurance companies. So you kind of got to wonder, should we give him the insurance badge on his NASCAR robe? Now, the weird thing is, for all of the talk about, and all of the talk from DeSantis about, you know, the Florida miracle, and, you know, how we're, you know, the most, you know, the best economy state, I saw that Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach, that whole area down there, their inflation rate right now is 9%. National average is 4%. They're at 9, more than double. And it's because of, you know, insurance, housing prices going through the roof, extraordinarily costly replacement costs when their houses get washed away. And this is one of those things where I keep coming back to. Did you not plan for this? Did you not know for the last 30 years that you're going to need more levies? Did you not know that you were going to maybe need, you know, some way of, I don't know, keeping the water out? And this is one of those moments where I go back to, maybe we stop. Because remember, our capitalist friends, our free market friends, of which our Republican friends do not ascribe, they would say, you know, if you can't afford the insurance, you're SOL. You're out of luck, buddy. So why is it that we taxpayers across this country keep bailing these people out? And look, this is not a new argument. There are people, you know, much smarter than I am who've been going, why are we doing this? Why are we encouraging rich people to build their water? And then when, surprisingly, there's a hurricane and, you know, a tornado, you know, there's all these disasters that we know are going to come. why do we keep rebuilding in the exact same spot to only have it washed away again? Oh, that's right. Because they've got lobbyists and they've got money. Why is it we're using that money to rebuild these palatial estates along the coasts when we could be using that for education? We could be using that for healthcare. We could get them U-Hauls. We could get these people... I say there should be a program, free U-Hauls, for all the people living in Florida so they could gather the sheep and get the flock out. That seems reasonable to me. That seems rational. It's time to go. We're not going to do anything on climate change. We're not going to save the environment. We're not going to do anything for future generations. It's time to, well, save ourselves. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find ours. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. The little steel strike was beginning to collapse. Strikers in Massillon, Ohio had gathered that Sunday night at Union headquarters across from Republic Steel's Massillon Works. As Ahmed White describes in his book, The Last Great Strike, the union had organized weekly festivities on Sunday nights, including food, live music, and dancing. For weeks, the Law and Order League had repeatedly demanded special police be deputized and armed to crush the strike. By early July, Ohio National Guardsmen ensured the forcible reopening of the mill. One self-appointed special deputy leader, Major Curley, decided tonight would be the night he was going to, quote, clean out that goddamned hall. He provocatively positioned his deputies in front of Union headquarters. First, he ordered his deputies to fire on picketers attempting to block the gate at shift change. When strikers hurled bottles and rocks in response, the deputies unleashed massive rounds of gunfire and tear gas for more than half an hour. Guardsmen, railroad, and company police joined in the anti-SWAC siege. Two strikers were dead. Nick Valdos was shot in the hip as he attempted to aid wounded strikers. Fulgencio Calzera was shot in the back of the head in front of Union headquarters. Another seven strikers were shot and seriously wounded. At least four more were hospitalized with injuries. Police forces ransacked the hall, seizing union records and membership lists. They continued their rampage through the neighborhood, ransacking homes and arresting anyone suspected of having ties to the union. As many as 165 were arrested and held for several days. As White notes, the NLRB and the La Follette Commission both concluded that blame for the evening's violence lay with Republic.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
About 150 years ago, General Philip Sheridan was sweltering in the relentless heat of a Texas summer. He was not happy. If I owned Texas and all hell, he groused, I would rent out Texas and live in hell. Summer has always been hot here, but 2023 has been something else, thanks to a hellish heat dome that has been baking us since late spring, sending daily temps up to 116 degrees. But worse, a more punishing heat has hit us from an even stranger, unnatural dome, the Texas State Capitol. That's where our malicious governor, Greg Abbott, and his GOP majority of extremist right-wing lawmakers rigged the rules to make life easier and richer for corporate elites and much harder for working people. In this year's legislative session, they rammed a nasty piece of plutocratic meanness into law that critics dubbed Death Star. It annihilates the basic right of local officials and voters to govern their own cities and counties. In particular, it empowers autocratic state officials and even corporate executives to nullify decisions by localities to protect workers and others from corporate abuse. In a cruel case of bad timing, the first local law targeted for nullification by the Texas GOP is a humane requirement in Dallas and other cities that developers provide 10-minute water breaks for construction workers. This in a state with America's highest rate of heat-related deaths and presently suffering biblical-level heat. Triple-digit temperatures kill, yet Abbott, his air-conditioned legislative cronies, and his corporate campaign donors whine that a required water break was, quote, an oppressive burden on the extraordinarily rich construction industry.
This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a new rule I'd like to see. No lawmaker or lobbyist is allowed to oppose heat protections for workers unless they spend July and August with no air conditioning for themselves.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's Prime Day! That's right, Amazon Prime Day! You can get your cheap garbage delivered to your door in mind-blowing speed. And it's one of these things where you go, every Prime Day I go, you know, okay, this is great, fine. You're gonna sell stuff at a little bit cheaper to entice people to buy more. I get it. People need their fix of cheap stuff. Because it's what we've been sold for the last 40 years. Give up good wage jobs because, hey, you can still get cheap stuff. But what about the people who bring that cheap stuff? Again, coming out of the pandemic, we're talking about people who we said were heroes. They were essential. They were all those things. But what about those folks who in this blazing July heat are the ones out there making that cheap stuff show up on your door? It's not magic. Someone's got to do it. What kind of deal do they get? Here to share some thoughts on how that's going to work out. I've asked our good friend Randy Corgan to come talk with us. Randy's the Secretary, Treasurer, and Principal Officer at Teamsters Local 1932. Their website, teamsters1932.org. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, always a pleasure to be on here, and especially on Prime Day. Isn't that amazing?
So Prime Day, magic stuff shows up on our door cheap. It's amazing. It's great. You know, never mind those people who have to, you know, drive in those trucks to bring it. What's going on today?
Well, you know, hundreds of thousands of workers are having to, labor themselves in very difficult situations. I think, as you pointed out, we're a very cheap product, and there's a cost to it. What's the cost? And what's the cost of the industry? What's the cost of these workers? What's the cost? What's the exchange here? You get a bunch of stuff for a little bit cheaper on Prime Day over a couple days. And then the system, you know, fills up with all these orders. And, people in the fulfillment centers and the sortation centers and the delivery stations all, you know, get flooded with a tremendous amount of work who are being exploited at an incredibly challenging situations. And I don't think that the average customer realizes that Amazon delivery driver that's showing up at the doorstep is actually, according to Amazon, is not an employee of Amazon, even though they have the uniform, they drive the vehicle, they're utilizing Amazon equipment, and the amount of control which Amazon exerts over those workers and that workforce is a little bit mind-blowing when they say they're not ours, but we want them to look like ours, and then not even paying them a decent wage in the industry. We found in Palmdale that the Amazon doesn't even reimburse the DSPs for holiday pay. They tell them, yeah, give them these holidays, just five of them, and then they don't give them the ability to pay for the holiday pay. And so the contractor's got to figure out how to pull that out if they want to pay holiday pay. So Amazon, you know, prides themselves on saying all this different stuff, and it's pretty crazy. Another interesting statistic is out of those 84 drivers and dispatchers, only two of them were taking the health care. All these workers are flying without health care.
Just
can't afford it. And when you're making less than $20 an hour to do a job, that really should be paying somewhere in the high 20s, low 30s, even arguably in the high $30 an hour range, with very little benefits. You know, it's just an exploitive situation for some cheap stuff on Prime Day. What's the exchange? I think if the average person understood what the exchange was, they probably, you know, try to do something to help that workforce that's delivering to them.
Because I think everybody knows somebody who works in this industry. I know a couple of people who work at Amazon, and you know, we have conversations about the environment, the wages, all of this stuff. And look, they all want to do better. They all want better wages, hours, conditions. But our labor laws are so badly broken and antiquated that, you know, nobody that I've talked to believes that they've got an opportunity. They've got a shot. Now, look, I do see a lot of worker action going on, and that's a positive. But I think I would love to see more.
Well, I think you're going to see more. You're seeing just that over the last couple of weeks, you've seen extension of pickets out of Southern California. The Palmdale Group has landed in other parts of California. It's landed in New Jersey. It's landed in Boston. It's landed in Connecticut. And, you know, I'm hearing that there's probably more to come. And, you know, it goes to show it. And then when what's incredible to watch, Rick, is these workers from Palmdale leading a picket line, you know, in another state or, you know, in another city. And when they're talking to volunteers or other workers in the industry and or the Amazon workers in a facility or the drivers that are delivering product, the common carriers that are coming in and delivering, you're seeing them get off the truck and grab a sign and walk the line with them. And it's because these workers are very articulate. They are very passionate about their position. And they're getting other workers to join them in this direct action in the industry, which is much needed. It is something that we really need to do more of, more workers need to do more of. Rick, it is beautiful to watch, like Jesse, seeing him stand there and talk to 100 people that, you know, they're UPSers or they come from grocery or they come from other parts, you know, of the industry and, you know, and other Amazon workers, just explaining what they're fighting for, what they're doing, what they're trying to accomplish, and just seeing workers come together and say, we're going to join you in this and walking off the job is incredibly powerful to watch.
No, I mean, we're in an important moment. I mean, especially coming out of the pandemic, when, as I said to earlier, you know, when these people were called heroes and essential and all of these things, and they got us through the pandemic only to find out that they're not making, you know, ends meet. They're not getting health insurance. They've got don't have health or retirement security. And the conditions that they labor under, deplorable. And in this day and age, it shouldn't be this way, especially when you're talking about a company as wildly profitable as Amazon.
Well, I think you're right. And I think one of the things you pointed out earlier is that the average person goes to work and sees the behemoth and the size in which Amazon is. And then they kind of start to think, well, it's impossible to take this on. But we see cities are rejecting them. We see, you know, municipalities are rejecting Amazon and their business model. We see workers are rejecting their business model. You know, obviously, you see all this activity and that this labor dispute that's happening coming out of 396 and Palmdale is directly at Amazon. It's not the subcontractor because Amazon really appears to be the employer here with the amount of control that they have.
Yeah.
And what's happening is these workers are starting to connect to others and they're starting to recognize, you know what, maybe we can do something about this. And, you know, Amazon wants it to, I guess, you know, corporate America and their beating down of the law that protects workers under the National Labor Relations Act. You know, the National Labor Relations Act, you and I have talked about this before, didn't happen until workers themselves took direct action and kind of shut down and really took control of certain industries and parts of industries. And then the Wagner Act was a peace agreement to settle that down. And at the end of the day, we got to kind of get back there again because it doesn't appear as if any policymakers are going to help deal with this.
Yeah, there's no benevolence here. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Randy Corrigan. Randy's the Secretary, Treasurer, Principal Officer at Teamsters Local 1932. Teamsters1932.org is their website if you want to get any information on the work that they're doing, especially around Amazon. Because again, this is one of those moments where, you know, I'm hearing this and I'm seeing some of this, you know. What I'm actually seeing is corporate America trying to push back on it because they know. They've rigged the courts. They've rigged our politics. They've rigged the laws. Everything, see, the pendulum has swung to their side. The one thing they don't have is the empowerment piece of working people coming together. But I saw this sign, and I got to get your thought on this. And I saw this sign on the internet. It's supposedly the big giant M, the Golden Arch place. They're all over the place. Evidently, they posted a sign that said, "We value you, your growth, your contributions. This is a no-quit restaurant because we feel that many situations can be resolved. It is the policy of this restaurant that an employee cannot quit until he or she talks to the restaurant manager or area supervisor." And I'm going, you know, the only power workers really have is to fold their arms and march their feet. And they now want to take part of that away. And they have taken it away in other places. I see this getting much worse, but I want to get your thought on this.
Look, man, I think what it does is it identifies, you know, the origins of corporate America's problem in the United States going back to 1776. The reality is you have a huge corporation trying to take away someone's right to quit. Like, is that crazy? That is slavery. Like, let's open the door on that discussion. Go back to 1776 and recognize the fact that this country was formed based on a protest. But what they left out was the fact that you could own your labor. And they thought that that was okay for a long period of time. And the industrialists and the landowners and all the super wealthy at the time just, oh, no, this is okay. It's okay to do that. And you know what? The rules still haven't corrected themselves in America. They have still not worked themselves off of that original foundation from the founding fathers that most people want to prop up. And, hey, look, they did some good things. But they also did some bad things. And some bad things were that you owned labor. All laws were built around the fact that you could own labor. And that has carried on generation after generation after generation. And you see a reemerging right there. Oh, let's take away someone's right to quit. Are you kidding me? It's crazy.
No, it's crazy. But, you know, I say all the time, they're heading us back to the days of the Lochner era, right, where, you know, if you're desperate enough and hungry enough to work in deplorable conditions for poverty wages, it's your freedom. It's your choice. It's your liberty, Randy. It's up to you. Even though we both know that, what choice do you have in a lot of these? I've been bringing up the fact that, you know, these forced arbitration clauses that people are forced to sign. Did you have a choice? No. If you didn't sign it, you didn't get the job. That's how they got you. These are the new yellow dog contracts of the past.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we can definitely beat this horse, you know, pretty hard over and over again. The reality is until workers take direct action and take control, It's that's where the shift's going to happen. If you look at anything in our history over our 247 years now, and you recognize, you have to recognize the fact that it's only been the movement of people that have marched in the streets or withheld their labor or have, you know, revolted in some way to say, hey, please pay attention to the subject, this issue, this culture, this challenge. That people wake up and go, oh, maybe we'll do something about it. None of this stuff has ever been handed to the American people, like by a group of corporate interests that say, oh, yeah, let's give them a holiday.
Yeah.
No. As a matter of fact, it's always been the opposite. They fought every single holiday along the way, but then they obviously, you know, commercialize every single holiday and try to make a ton of money on every bit of it. And then they don't even want to pay you for it.
No, I mean, the reality is it's the old saying, nothing's been given, everything's been demanded. And you had to fight for all the things that we're given. There are no benevolent dictators. So last line of questioning I've got for you, you know, we're in stations all across the country. There are Amazon facilities all over these places. What's the word to those Amazon workers who are busting their behinds on Prime Day? And you know, for a lot of them, life isn't getting any better. What's the message for them?
Very simple. Put it down collectively. Set it down. Hold up your work for a certain period of time and demand that your supervisor or, you know, whoever's in control of your shop floor or your operation, pay attention to the issues and you articulate what those issues are. You put those demands clearly forward and you say, hey, we're not going to work until you make the adjustment, until you make the change. Workers are doing this all over the country right now. Amazon doesn't want to talk about it. Corporate America doesn't want to talk about it. The mainstream media is going to be very careful about how they talk about it because they're absolutely controlled by corporate America and they don't want these types of things to look successful even when they are. So what's the message to them? You can win. You can see over and over again where wages have been raised at these Amazon facilities where workers have come together and they've demanded more. You can see that their working conditions have been adjusted and changed and that Amazon has changed the policies specifically written, dealt with a response to workers pushing back. And you can actually take every one of those changes and reach it back to the specific area, whether it was in Minnesota or California or New York or Seattle or Chicago. Wherever those pushes happen from the workers, it changed the nationwide policy for Amazon workers. So they have to believe in themselves and believe in one another that it can happen no matter how much individuals will tell you it can't. can't. And if they have done it. And clearly, we've been a bit spoiled in this generation. If you look back to the 1920s and the 1930s, they had no laws, no protections. There was nothing in this space to help a worker. We may complain and we may not be happy with a lot of way it sits now, and we feel like a lot of this has been eroded, but it is better than it was when those workers, you know, had absolutely nothing, and they had to tear at it, they had to tear at the industry or tear at their elected leaders or whatever they needed to do to gain some momentum. So we have to appreciate that, we have to recognize that, but we also have to not squander and waste the opportunity. Capture it and move to action now. Put the work down.
There you go. Randy, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Absolutely. Anytime, Rick.
Our good friend Randy Corrigan. He is the Secretary, Treasurer, and Principal Officer at Teamsters Local 1932. Teamsters1932.org is the website. Check that out. You got questions, comments, something on your mind for him, you will find him there. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day that the American Indian Movement began at a meeting in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A group of 200 Native Americans gathered together to discuss a response to the U.S. government's history of broken treaties and the devastating consequences on Native peoples. The statistics of unyielding poverty and high unemployment in Native communities were staggering. By 1970, 40% of the Native population lived in poverty. The unemployment rate was 10 times the national average. Life expectancy was only 44 years old. In the early 1970s, activists staged a series of occupations at Alcatraz, Wounded Knee, and at Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore is built on a site in the Black Hills that is sacred to the Ocheti Sakowin, or the Great Sioux Nation. The United States government promised Native rights to the land in a treaty that was broken when gold was discovered. In 1972, activists staged a Trail of Broken Treaties caravan, which ended in a six-day occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Washington, D.C. They issued a statement that read, quote, "We seek a new American majority, a majority that is not content merely to confirm itself by superiority of numbers, but which conscience is committed toward prevailing upon the public will in ceasing wrongs and doing right." Beginning in the 1970s, the United States government began to respond to Native peoples' demands. A series of federal acts gave Native communities more control over their education and improving their health care. Lawsuits brought by tribes resulted in further economic autonomy. Yet by 2014, one in four Native people still lived in poverty.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So here, who didn't see this coming? Evidently, a Michigan hair salon, citing the Supreme Court case that just said, hey, you know what, that website that nobody wanted, you don't have to make it for that gay person you didn't know. But evidently, the hair salon has stated that they're no longer accepting LGBTQ customers. Evidently, the woman who was in charge there called them pedophiles, compared them with animals, said they should be going to pet groomers. We told you, look, here's the thing. I've told you, this isn't about cake. This isn't about websites. This is about power. This is about going after these folks and humiliating them. And look, not my issue, not my thing, but this is where you get my attention, because if it's these folks today, who is it tomorrow? When does it end? I mean, you know, the Pastor Niemöller quote, You know, first they came for the trade unionists, and I said nothing because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I said nothing because I wasn't a Jew. And then you get down the list all the way down to, then they came for me, and there was nobody left to speak up. This is the kind of stuff that has to be squashed immediately. This is the kind of stuff that the fascistic right wing of this country is just salivating over. To be able to, well, punish the other and get their base all tingly in the panties and all worked up. And it's not just on this issue. There was a story in Nebraska. A woman in Nebraska, a mother pleaded guilty to giving her 17-year-old daughter a pill for an abortion last year. Then helped to dispose of the evidence because it's against the law in Nebraska. Thank you, U.S. Supreme Court. Now you have this woman who's pled guilty. Her daughter is also accused of a crime. They're going to end up in prison because of something that was legal 2 years ago. And, you know, the sad reality is, you know, we're going to see a lot more of this. We're going to see a lot more of these desperate situations of people doing desperate things when we've just got bad public policy. And, you know, I've come back to this story again and again, because the idea is it's not just about abortion. These people don't care about children. It's about control. They don't care about people at all. It's about power and control. Because here's the thing. If they really cared, if they really loved the children, if they really wanted the babies, other than for just cheap labor. You know, I still remember Tom DeLay going, you know, if abortion was illegal, we'd have those 40 million workers and we wouldn't need those people from Mexico, because we'd have tons of domestically grown cheap labor. But if, come with me, if you will, on this, because if our pro-life folks really were pro-life, if they really, I mean, honestly, if they really care, if they really, really, to their core, their sincerely held religious beliefs, they would have opened that book that they claim that they love so much, and they would have found a guy that they claim to love a lot talking about feeding the hungry and taking care of the sick and the poor and the downtrodden. You would have seen policy coming out of states to ensure, I don't know, school lunch programs, school breakfast programs. You would see, you know, maybe programs to help, you know, low-income families, you know, get the health care that they need so that they can thrive. Maybe you would see, I don't know, education funding that would help, you know, families do better. Maybe you would see these policies, you know, work themselves out. Maybe you'd see this stuff being proposed. But what do I see? I'm looking at Iowa. I'm looking at Iowa and 15 other states who are trying to destroy child labor laws. We want to go back 100 years. Put the kids back in the mines and in the slaughterhouses. They got small hands, small bodies. They can fit in those tight spaces. It's really quite remarkable of what we've allowed to happen. And it's because the loud minority has continued to push this divisive stuff. Look, are there things that I don't agree with every group? Yeah. But life, liberty, pursuit of happiness is like a central, it's like the North Star. And these people don't believe, well, they do. They believe in their happiness. And their happiness is telling you you're wrong. And that you need to be, you need adjustment. That you need to take care of yourself. So when I see these stories, and again, these are predictable. We knew this years ago. When Trump took office, we knew this stuff was coming. So when we see it happen, you go, here it is. Now you have to decide which side are you on. The classic labor frame. Which side? Which side of history will you be found on? This is the interesting thing. Most of the people that I know when I bring up CTE, you know, that theory about race that's critical, you know, that thing. One of the arguments that I get them to make eventually as we play through the song and dance that you have to get through is, well, their family, their tree, their lineage, their heritage is on the wrong side of history. And I believe mine was too. Here's the thing. I'm not them. I didn't do this stuff.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.